Michigan Court of Appeals, Division One, is now in session. The Honorable Ann Schindler presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. First case on the calendar is Cortinas. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. You look hesitant. How much time would you like to reserve, and would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. And my name is Brett Hill, and I'm here on behalf of Cortinas Painting. Joining me at council's table is Pat Paxson, who's also representing Cortinas Painting.
All right, thank you.
So this is a construction delay case. The issue in the case is whether a general contractor can assess liquidated damages against a subcontractor when there was no actual proof presented at trial as to the amount of liquidated damages that were actually imposed by the owner upon the general contractor that were being passed down to the subcontractor, and there was undisputed concurrent delays that were going on during the alleged delay caused by the subcontractor, my client, Cortinas Painting.
So you're basically arguing there was not substantial evidence to support the trial court's finding?
Correct.
And why not?
Well, as to the finding that liquidated damages were actually imposed upon Corp Inc., you have to look at the settlement agreement that was entered into between Corp Inc. and the City of Mercer Island. That settlement agreement resolved competing claims. Corp Inc. had a claim for $1.2 million against the City of Mercer Island. The City of Mercer Island had a claim against Corp Inc. for, it says, delays and other damages. Corp Inc.'s claim was part repayment of the withheld liquidated damages of $671,000, but then there was other amounts that were included in that $1.2 million. Part of that was about $425,000 for a claim for extra contractual or extra work that they were asking for. And then also a part of it appears to be retainage. The settlement agreement basically resolved those claims, but it was a classic mediated settlement. There's no way to determine how much was being actually withheld for liquidated damages or how much, for example, the city was rejecting for the extra contractual claim of $425,000. In the settlement, Corp Inc. was paid $575,000. We don't know if that $575,000 was repayment of that withheld liquidated damages of $671,000 or whether it was payment for the extra contractual claim and retainage. The settlement agreement itself is the only evidence that the trial court had to determine whether liquidated damages were actually imposed by the owner, the City of Mercer Island, against Corp Inc. That settlement agreement, you cannot discern whether it was for liquidated damages or for some other discount. Because of that, there wasn't evidence presented at trial to establish that the City of Mercer Island imposed liquidated damages. They tried to say that the liquidated damages were withheld. Sure, they were withheld, but then if they got paid back in the settlement when they got paid $575,000, then the liquidated damages were not actually imposed, which is what the subcontract provides for determining whether Corp Inc. can pass down liquidated damages. Because of that, there was no evidence at trial presented on this issue, and as a result, Corp Inc. cannot pass down those liquidated damages to my client, Cortinas Painting. As to the second issue that I raised regarding the concurrent delays, I'm not going to raise the rest of the issues that were addressed in the brief, but I'm going to rely upon the brief as to those arguments. As to the concurrent delay issue, there doesn't appear to be any dispute by Corp Inc. that if there are concurrent delays, that it has the obligation to apportion those delays. And in this case, the most clear example of a concurrent delay that was not apportioned, and there was no evidence that this delay was apportioned, is the roofing delay. The roofing delay, according to the undisputed testimony, started in September of 2014 when the roof was rejected by the city. Bruce Blake testified to this at RP 68 or 668. And then the roof issue continued through the date of settlement. And that settlement occurred in April of 2016. So from September.
Was there testimony that, specifically said that these were concurrent delays?
There was Mr. Blake's testimony that said that it started in September of 2016. And then
that overlapping delays aren't necessarily concurrent delays. So was there testimony establishing that they were concurrent delays?
Yes, because he says the roof is rejected, and we know that the roof wasn't replaced until 2016. And so during that period, that roof issue is what the city has pointed to as being why they have not granted substantial completion. And there's actually a letter from the city that says this.
Well, that's related to the substantial completion. That's another argument that you're making. And the trial court made the determination at the end point was a certificate of occupancy, no?
And that's why this case is really hard to understand what's going on, because it gets to the issue of whether liquidated damages and how much were imposed by the owner. There wasn't actually any evidence presented about how much was imposed and for what period was imposed by the owner. But the contract, the owner contract, was admitted into evidence, and that says that the liquidated damages run through substantial completion. And the city had taken the position, and we're talking about what the city has imposed, undisputedly, what the city did determines whether they had imposed liquidated damages. Their letter, which is Exhibit 243, says that the city is going to continue to, which is Exhibit 243, which is their May 2015 letter, after Cortina's painting, the alleged delay by Cortina's painting had concluded, the roof issue is still going on. And the city points directly to that roof issue in their letter, which was admitted at trial, Exhibit 243, and says that the city is going to continue to assess liquidated damages due to the defective roof. Yes. Well, at that point, there was no more money to withhold from Corp Inc., but their letter says that they're continuing to assess liquidated damages. So,
but did they?
Well, they certainly, part of it, we don't know.
The question is, if there were liquidated damages, how much were actually imposed? And the trial court found $671,000 and some odd dollars. Why isn't there sufficient evidence to support that finding?
Well, they found it was $626,000, which is what the settlement agreement specifies.
But they said 179 times, 179 days of delay times $3,750 equals $671,000. That was the trial court's math.
Correct. But then they go to 626 to try to say
that's based on the settlement. Correct.
But the settlement, the language in the settlement, actually, again, we're talking about a settlement agreement that my client wasn't a part of, had no notice of, and it's now being used against them. But that language only says that's how much Corp Inc. is arguing the subs were responsible for. But there wasn't any sort of agreement between the city and Corp Inc. that is how much the subs were responsible for.
Judge Cox, Judge Schindler, Judge Spearman, good morning. Alan Bornstein on behalf of Corp Inc. and Travelers. I can quickly dispatch with the arguments that opposing counsel has just made. First, the settlement agreement in this case, which is 224, was not only considered by the judge, there was Mr. Anati's testimony, which explained that the money, the damages payment set off, was paid to the city in the form of not the release. The city kept our money. It was money that we earned and the city kept. So it's a payment. And he explained that there was a reservation by us to go after the subcontractors for their delay, for the delays that they caused, not just Cortina's, but other subs. And then we apportioned the delays in this case for 13 days. So it was the settlement agreement plus Mr. Nadi's testimony.
So is your argument then that the record supports the proposition that the settlement agreement did not address liquidated damages?
No, it did. It said damages, liquidated, or other, and then Mr. Noddy testified about what the partisan
other?
Said was.
What did he testify about, both liquidated and the other?
He testified about liquidated damages, the city's damages, which are liquidated damages, being passed through or being able to be passed through against any of the subcontractors. Secondly, there's been some factual misstatements that have to be corrected immediately. First, there's a difference between assessment of liquidated damages and retention. Mr. Hill misstated the record that there was money left after that last payment to my client. Liquidated damages, which were withheld, ended on May 5, 2015, which was the date of substantial completion, the date of the certificate of occupancy, which was the project completion date. The roof argument's a red herring. If the roof was truly concurrent delay, there would have been no certificate of occupancy, would there? There wouldn't be any fire trucks in that building. There wouldn't be any calls taken out of that building. So the two factual misstatements are, one, not all the money was withheld. We repaid that last payment, and the retained money ended as of the 5th, which was the 671,000, 5th of May, pardon me, which was the $671,200 figure. No money was withheld after that date. The city had use of that fire station as of the 5th of May. No concurrent delay.
So under your argument, then, the actual liquidated damages that were imposed by the city was the 626,000 number. Is that correct?
It started at 671,250. Then through the settlement, they actually took, with the payment, the 626,100. So there was a limit on how much we could assert against the subs. It was less than the full amount that we would have tried to. So it actually minimized, it lowered the amount that we could seek against any of the other subs, including this one.
But the trial court based its award on the 671,000 figure, didn't it?
No, the court acknowledged that there were 671,250, and then the city got paid 621,260. That's the figure that we could pass through against any sub, including Cortinas. That's the maximum we could pass through for delay damages against any sub. Not the 671 anymore, but the lower figure, which was $50,000 lower.
And how is that lower amount calculated?
The lower amount is calculated, the total liquidated damages is the sum of $3,750 per diem times 179 days. So the city took ownership of some of those days, but not the balance of them. So the balance of the liquidated damages, which would be assessable at $3,750, would be against each subcontractor who may or may not have caused a delay. Or if we caused a delay, we owned it, and that's our problem.
But the base figure was $3,750?
$3,750, as stated in the owner's contract.
Okay.
Now, within our subcontract, at Section 15.2, there are two vehicles for recovery for my client. The second to the last sentence, of Section 15.2 says, if you, Corps, have actual liquidated damages for your own work, and we don't have liquidated damage, we don't have a separate liquidated damages clause for any damage that we cause. There's no dollar figure unique to Corps for its own damages, for example, extended field costs, extended labor costs. So we had to prove actual damages. So that's where you have the small figure of $7,800 were our actual damages, because we did not have a liquidated damages clause for us, for damages to us.
Let me go back for just a second. If it was $375, $3,750 a day at 179, and the total was 671.
Yes.
And the actual number that you paid was 626 some odd thousand.
Right.
Is it still? Are you still being assessed at $375 a day?
Yes, because mathematically you could. Yes, because we've taken ownership of some of those days, so it's the balance that we can seek. Well, the city's taken ownership of that $50,000 component, and then maybe we caused some delays, so we can't pass that on. But that $626,000, $621,000 is the amount that we can seek against the other subs, including Cortinas.
Correct.
At the rate of
three. So wouldn't you take the 626 number divided by 179 and come up with that that number and then multiply that number by 13 to figure out what the damages
you,
are?
You could. I mean, the judge considered and weighed this evidence and made a determination. He didn't because the city took some ownership of that as well.
Okay, and what finding or where would I find that in the record?
It would be Mr. Minotti's testimony, which I believe was at page. It's at 35, maybe 35. Let me see where his testimony is. He doesn't directly address the calculation. What he says is, we paid the city. The balance was fair game to go against the subs, or we did ourselves. And Cortinas was responsible for 13 of those remaining days, not the full 179, but the remaining component. That concludes my response to opposing counsel's opening comments, since he narrowed it to just two issues.
What about the argument that he makes on behalf of his client about the concurrent delay?
The judge considered that and weighed it and ruled against it. We have Mr. French in testimony saying he looked for concurrent delay. He, on days where there's no concurrent delay, we didn't charge Cortinas. The seven incidents of defective and untimely work are days solely chargeable to Cortinas and not to any of the subcontractors. So Mr. French evaluated that. And then Mr. Shirayama, whose analysis was a logical cross-check of the construction schedule that Mr. French relied upon, because French relies upon a November 2014 schedule, contemporaneous job records, which we identify in each of the seven incidents, and his job knowledge. Shirayama did a cross-check, unobjected, evidence was unobjected either as far as testimony and exhibits, that he wanted to make sure, for example, that the schedule didn't show concrete being poured for an area where an excavation would have had to have occurred first, where maybe the logic was backwards.
Well, one of the criticisms of Mr. French, I think, was that he did not support his testimony with a critical path schedule.
And you don't need to. You have to do a critical path analysis, which Mr. French did based upon contemporary job records, a reliable 2014 schedule, which was unobjected to as a reliable schedule, and his testimony. So you don't need to have a critical path schedule to do a critical path analysis. It may be a handy tool. And then Mr. Shirayama testified, unobjected to, which is substantial evidence, that Mr. French engaged in a critical path analysis. So the critical path analysis is what is needed, and that's what was done, and that's what Judge Oishi considered and weighed and ruled against them on that in our favor. Do you have any other questions for me?
No, thank you.
Thank you kindly.
Just to quickly address the two issues that we were talking about here. First, The court appears to be right on to the issue that is the problem with the settlement agreement, and that is that there was an assessment of liquidated damages of $671,000, and then the settlement agreement says that there's $626,000 that's being passed down to the subs. Somebody got a discount there of about $50,000. We don't know who it was. Corp Inc. now claims that it was the city that took responsibility for $50,000 of that delay. But certainly that delay period, that $671,000, is calculated based on the 179 days that are alleged to be responsibility of subcontractors, and 13 of those days are my client's days, allegedly. But how do we know how much the owner was taking responsibility for? Was it a delay that occurred during the delay period that my client caused? Or if that $50,000 disappeared because Corp Inc. Took that money, and that it was some other contractor or perhaps Corp Inc. that was responsible for that $50,000, there was no evidence presented about when that period occurred. And so without that evidence, we're left with looking at a settlement agreement that settles disputed claims, and we don't know exactly how much is being assessed in liquidated damages. The only language, again, is that language in the settlement agreement that only says that Corp Inc. is saying that that is how much the subcontractors are responsible for. But there was not anything in the settlement agreement saying that the city agrees that that is how much they're responsible for. So for that reason, we ask that you in favor of my client, Corp Inc.
Thank you. The next case is